So just befriend the weak. And break another heart this
and welcome to This Week in Wrestling Indies International. I'm Pete, and I'm with Timothy. Timothy, man, how you doing?
Doing pretty good. Busy week with the WXW Tag League show. Weekend shows all coming out. Been catching up on all that. Some good stuff there.
Anything that needs to be watched?
So far, no, but I'm not all the way done. The actual Tag League itself has underwhelmed a little bit, just because they had some teams in there that, I mean, you know, Lucha Brothers can be good, but Phoenix is obviously much better than Pentagon, and Phoenix is honestly better by himself. The Okami team from Big Japan really feel out of place there, but otherwise, I mean, you know, everything is kind of run in the mill. The last couple of years, the Tag League has been so good, but there was a really good Freddie Ahai versus Tim Thatcher match on the Inner Circle show. That I would recommend. And then there was a Mako Satomura versus Millie McKenzie match on the female show that was really good. So those are the ones that I would recommend. It was, honestly, that match was pretty impressive because it felt like a real fight. And it's like, you don't really get that a lot from girls. But that's part of why I've been a big fan of Millie McKenzie. I don't know if you've seen much of her.
I've seen a little bit of her, and I like her, yeah.
Yeah, but she brings a fight to her match style, and they have her playing the human suplex machine, which kind of comes off of, you know, like the Taz thing or whatever.
Okay.
But they don't really play that up too much, that it's like a relation to Taz, but she does wrestle a roughneck style that you don't see from a lot of girls that really, like I said, it feels like a fight when she's in there that you don't get from you know, a bunch of women. I've also been watching the Mae Young Classic recently, which, I mean, everyone knows what's good on that. It's pretty much the same matches that everyone's talking about that are good. Nothing stood out to me that people weren't talking about, except for Rhea Ripley was impressive, and I'd seen a little bit of her stuff in Australia, but did not expect this much. She's really come together as the character that she's playing right now in Mae Young Classic. But how about you, Pete? How's your week been going?
Doing pretty good. I have tickets to AAW tomorrow. I'm just not sure if I'm going to go now, just because I forgot it's going to be super busy here in Austin, and I fucking despise traffic, and it's all the way up north, so it's kind of a pain in the ass, so I might skip it. Part of it is because the show, it just doesn't really excite me. There's only a couple matches, like, I'm like, wow, that's blow away. I mean, there's just like a shit ton of tag matches, and so I don't know. I might pass on it. Have you looked at the lineup?
Yeah, that show is weird, man, because me and you predicted stuff was going to happen on the show, right? And it feels like such a nothing show. I mean, we were, you know, speculating ACH being the, you know, kind of big triumphing baby face in front of his home crowd, and he's not, that didn't come to fruition. I mean, they didn't have to book him, you know, in a title match against Brody King necessarily, but at least something that felt like it mattered. And just so much of it is just a throwaway show. It's so weird because people were questioning, why is this show happening? And I think my prediction was, like, because if you question something like that, then there must be a reason. They must have a big deal for it. And it feels like they're just running like a house show in Texas and not really like anything that matters.
Yeah.
So weird.
Yeah, that's what it kind of feels like. So, yeah, so it's just like, I'm really not there's only a couple of matches on that whole entire show that really, really excite me. So it's kind of like, Why bother if I'm on the fence about having to go up there all the way up north? Where it's ACL weekend down here, so fucking traffic's gonna be fucking a bitch, and I don't drive, so trying to get a fucking cab back to down south, it just sounds tough. I mean, it's not like it's a terrible car, but it's just like what? You know, we have Jimmy Jacobs and Brody King teaming up against Callahan and Darby Allin, ACH and Kingston versus Kingston, Trevor Lee versus Rich Swann, Extra Talented versus the besties in the world, Thunder Rosa versus Kylie Rae, Zachary Wentz versus Desmond Xavier. No, I mean, those teams are teaming versus Myron Reed and A.R. Fox, Laredo Kid versus Jason Cade, Paco versus Kurt Stallion versus Stephen Wolf. And then we have this, like, Texas Goldmine
scramble match that they always do in the AAW, yeah.
You know, I mean, honestly, that's a shit ton of tag matches.
Right. And only a few that come across to me like something I want to see. Besties versus Extra Talented,
yeah,
obviously will be good.
Yeah.
You know, but, yeah, there's a lot of...
That's the thing. I think that's the only match I'm really all that... I'd be excited to see everything else. I mean, I don't like Sami Callihan. I don't like Jimmy Jacobs. So that's half the tag there. I'm out. Right. ACH and Kingston... yeah, it could be good.
Kingston has been fine in AAW recently, so
yeah,
he can have a good match there. But yeah, it's not a foolproof, definitely going to be great match.
Yeah, Trevor Lee versus Rich Swann yells where they're going to have a dance off. Thunder Rosa versus Kylie Rae was going to be good, but you know, Myron Reed versus A.R. Fox versus Zachary Wentz and Zayman Xavier is going to be a really good, you know, spot festy type thing.
Oh yeah.
But you know, it's just like, again, but it doesn't scream can't miss show, you know?
Right. I think, yeah, like Swan versus Trevor Lee, honestly, somewhere else could be a great match, right?
Yeah.
But AAW, it's going to be joke time.
Yeah.
And yeah, that women's match though, that, like you said it, that could be really good, but.
Yes.
In the middle of this card with two girls who I don't know if either of them have really worked in AAW before, it doesn't feel like it's going to have any importance. So it's just going to be a good match happening in a vacuum, which is tough to get excited for, you know?
Yeah, and there's not one match. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that I'm like, okay, like the Zachary Wentz tag, that's interesting. The Extra Talent, I'm like, oh yeah, that sounds like it could be good. And then, like we were just talking about, a Kylie Rae match, but there's not that one match that screams headlining match at all,
right? And I don't know who it could be for, because obviously they're going to kind of position that tag team match as the main event, you know, with the situation that's going on with Sammy and Jimmy and Brody and everything, but like, I don't know who Jimmy Jacobs and Sami Callihan are for in 2018. Really, I don't know. I don't know anybody who's excited about them, but they get positioned on shows as if people are still excited about them. It's so weird to me.
It is. I don't get it either. People have Callihan still is able to, because he has a manipulation with all his people. But the Jacobs thing is almost like mind blowing to me.
Jacobs, it feels like they book him based on the fact that he's supposed to be really smart at coming up with angles and stuff. It's fucking weird.
Yeah.
It's like you position him on your booking on the card based on him being a writer or a producer for the show, which doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, he should be getting booked at Ring of Honor or Evolve or something that runs MLW. You know, should be more there than the month-to-month type of thing. Yeah, so everything, I was expecting to see Phoenix or Pentagon on that card, and I was so surprised that neither one of them was booked for that show. So I was like, okay, I'm a little underwhelmed by the card, so I don't know if I want to go through the hassle of, and then again, I go to work the next morning and go into work at 5 in the morning. And so I don't know if I want to be up all, you know, up north at a show that I'm not, like, super psyched to see.
Right, yeah.
So not to bash on it, but I was expecting more. And there's still plenty of talent. I mean, honestly, there's a lot of talent on that card. I just don't particularly care and see them booked in the way they're being booked.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, I feel you. I've been there, you know, because with Los Angeles and dealing with traffic and everything that comes with it,
yeah.
Sometimes you get excited, buy tickets to a show, and then the card and everything comes out, and plus the traffic and dealing with everything. And it's, yeah, it ends up being like, is it worth it? You know, it's sunk cost fallacy. We'll do an economic minute here on on This Week in Wrestling. It's the sunk cost fallacy, the idea that because you've already bought the ticket, somehow you're, you know, required to go to the show, even though you're actually getting negative utility out of going to the show because you're not going to enjoy it and you're dealing with the traffic and everything else. So
yeah, and with me not driving, I need to get I don't think the bus is going to run that late, so I need to get an Uber or something back. And because we have ACL going down, I think getting an Uber will be fucking difficult.
Yeah,
or
and
a cab.
On top
or,
of that, the spike in price will be.
Yeah, that's the other number. So it's just like, I just don't know. It'll be a game time decision for me on Friday. I don't know if you noticed, next week WWE UK debuts, I believe on Wednesday.
Yeah, I think like a day or two before the RPW show debuts on TV. Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I guess that's going to be going weekly there. I don't know. I guess we'll start reviewing that. What do you think?
Yeah, I think we can give it a shot, see what it's like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, just an hour if we, you know, we've cut other things before.
Right.
So, you know, we'll throw it at the wall and see if it sticks.
We'll see how
or
it
if
goes.
It doesn't, it could be the next Lucha Underground or Ring of Honor.
We did review Ring of Honor at one point. That feels like ages ago at this point.
Yeah, no, it really does. How dated it is. And then I'm reading in the Observer, like New Japan with the ownership. It sounds like there's morale issues over there. Have you heard anything about this?
I just heard it mentioned a little bit that there's some kind of problems there, and it's always weird to think about where that's coming from with Dave. You know, we talked about Dave a little bit last week, obviously,
yes,
with the issues with the, you know, if you talk to him, then he trusts what you have to say. He doesn't. I don't know. We don't know his practice. I can't say for sure. And that's an issue, too, is he's not super transparent. But we don't know how journalistically standard he is with his, you know, what scoop does he buy into? Is he double sourcing things? You know, when you're getting a source from basically the same place, two people who are kind of agreeing with each other, that's not the same as double sourcing. It's like historically people.
You definitely sound like he double sourced because he said it's coming from. He's hearing it from the Americans and the Japanese talent.
Okay. Well, yeah, then that's, you know, that is what it is. But, yeah, so who knows? I mean, they were, like, a lot of the workers there getting away with murder in a lot of ways and then told to tone it back. There was the tease with the kind of little bit of leak that came out with the Bullet Club at one point when they were all still there, like the, you know, the actual Bullet Club tag team of Anderson and Gallows. That they were told to not cuss so much on TV. And that was a little bit of a, you know, it sounded almost like they were complaining. They weren't super complaining, but you never know. Like if a little bit of their freedom's getting reined in, a little bit of their kind of doing whatever they want is getting.
Yeah. And that's what they're like complaining about. It sounds like is there not that they don't feel respected as artists type of things and stuff. And
right. Which is, I mean, you know, not the point, right? I mean, it kind of is in some ways, but in other ways, you sign a paycheck or you sign on the contract to do what the boss tells you to. You just do it. It's not that big of a deal, and I feel like they still get away with doing, you know, a lot, it seems. And tightening up the show might not be a bad thing, you know? We don't need every match to feel so samey, and maybe if you tighten things up, people won't fall into the rut of doing the same stuff over and over
so,
again.
You know, we'll see how that transpires, but yeah, you know. But I understand, you know, you want to get everybody on the same page if you plan on full court pressing into the United States and other areas, you know?
Right, but I mean, Kenny has worked the fucking sheets to get himself a better contract before, so who's to say that low morale isn't coming from him and his crew to make the office even more worried that when it's time to re-sign, they won't? Because they're
not.
Yeah, because,
you know, January's coming around the corner and stuff, so that's where they're. Dates usually pop up, so yeah, we can see where that goes. Have you heard anything else that's interesting going on?
No, not particularly that I can think of, really. Same old kind of stuff going on. This WWE NXT UK is interesting, and that's about it, really.
Yeah, no, I agree. See, I'm kind of curious on how that's going to transpire. I wonder what this is going to say for the regular, because that's, I guess they're both going to be airing on Wednesdays?
Do you mean the NXT and the UK NXT? I guess, yeah, they're both going to be Wednesdays. I wonder if it's on before or after.
Yeah, I couldn't really tell, because I think they had it in, I didn't look closely, so, yeah, we can look closer later. But hey, why don't we get right into it, and, we're looking at MLW Fusion episode number 25, and it starts off with like a low-key voiceover of the of his match with Phoenix, right? Yeah. And you know, low-key, I kind of enjoy these voiceovers on these segments because his voice is kind of cool. But, you know, so I thought it worked overall. What about you?
Yeah, and I like it, and I like the way that it's presented and put together, and yeah, it has he has a different style, and his voice comes across like a professional voice actor because he's done a little bit of that stuff, and it's interesting and stands out, and honestly, it doesn't feel like a terrible thing to be kind of the focus of your company. You know, we've talked about Tom Lawler and Shane Strickland and their levels of overness, and them should be the top stars, but Loki, for that presentation, comes across like a special act that could be at the top. The problem is, you know, in ring, last week he had a great match, but he doesn't always have great matches. He doesn't always do what's best for business. But
yes,
in the promos and all that stuff, some of it's, he comes across like a top guy. So I'll give that. He has a good aura to him, but you know, in backstage stuff, and we even talked about that.
Yeah, but like I was saying though, I don't know how much people buy into that aura nowadays.
Right.
There's still people who do. I don't want to say that there's not, that, but like for me, I was like, okay, I just, you know, this feels like he hasn't evolved any since fucking 2002, you know?
Yeah, that's definitely for sure the truth. And he
give or take, I mean at times we've seen him, you know, wearing a suit, or which is stupid, and other stuff, so you know, I don't know, but he doesn't feel like, yeah, there's not a fresh coat of paint or anything going on right now.
Right.
I will say, after watching the main event tonight on the show, they definitely better make sure they're paying the Lucha Brothers serious coin, because these brothers have both had great main events these last two shows, and that tag match with ACH against Rich Swann. They've had probably their five best matches in the company history.
Right, yeah, I know. Those two, they're really good. And, like, yeah, we're talking about what would happen with them going to NXT or whatever. It would be a big hit to MLW for sure at this point because,
yeah,
you know, they're the top act for this company.
To me, they're the backbone of this company.
Yeah.
And with Tom, with Filthy Tom as the third, you know. So clearly these are the three guys you got to build around the company on or make a chance, which they're doing. So I don't want to make it that, but they better pull the damn trigger on Lawler sooner than later, and build and make it something important. Because he's another guy who's clearly he's like a top dog, and they're promoting him well. Don't get me wrong, but it's just like, he's one of the three guys on the whole roster. Those are the three guys that stand out the most to me. Don't those three stand out the most to you?
Yeah, of course. There's no question, and they're just like the most talented in ring, pretty much the presentation, you know, we talked about with the Lucha Brothers. They have a star power, even if they can't necessarily cut promos. They get
and I still think Penta, even cutting him in Spanish, cuts a better promo than most of those guys that they throw out there for 20 seconds cutting a promo.
Yeah. No. And he feels comfortable and just legit and everything in his character. So, yeah, totally. Those three guys are the guys in MLW for sure that stand out. We talked about it. I mean, I talked about it a lot for weeks that there's nobody in this company that stands out. And then it's kind of Tom Lawler and the Lucha Brothers are starting to take that spot of being the people who stand out. I just worry that the brand is tainted now at this point because, I mean, as far as everyone I talk to, MLW 100% has a stink on it of just being not very good. You know, like people don't think of it as a very good company. And there are a couple guys who have good matches. 2 weeks in a row, the main event was pretty good. 2 weeks in a row, the main events were like pretty awesome. And some of the booking stuff on this show was a little bit better than it has been, but there is still a lot of issues with booking.
Yep. No, I agree. And we'll talk about more of that here in a bit. And then, it does have a stink to it. And, you know, it was something I was thinking about when I was watching NXT last night, and it applies here too. Like when these guys who don't speak English well and they're cutting, don't let them use English. Let them use their main language, and let them cut the promo like they would, and give us the wording underneath it, like and they do in Japan. I'd rather get that than a bad promo in broken English, honestly.
Yeah, no, completely. It doesn't make any sense.
And I mean, I understand in NXT practicing, but you know what? They don't have to air it. They can still practice. They can cut two promos, one for television and one for practice to work on their English.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, then we get Martinez. He defeats Jake St. Whatever. Oh, no, I'm sorry. We get Selena on a boat. MJF and Aria come by, and Loki's there. I gotta say, you know, MJF, I'm a proponent where I do like his promos, but this type of situation doesn't play to MJF's strengths at all. This is very WWE in a way, putting, you know, they're in a heated angle and they make it stupid. And that's what they did here. And it's, you know, and it just didn't play to MJF's strengths. He's better as a promo. He's not an actor. Aria looked like a deer in the headlights here. It didn't work for me at all. And they're like, you know, they're in a big time feud, and they're looking to have Loki as the bounty hunter. And so this is supposed to be pretty heated, but it came across as like a bad WWE angle. What about you? What'd you think?
This was kind of cheesy. I didn't like it. And I figure that's a write-off for Janela because he's injured, right? I would assume that they're just going to have some angle that he gets attacked and taken out. And it cheapens MJF, not just in the fact that you put him in a bad situation when it comes to being a character on screen, but also that, you know, he buys his way out of his big feud that he's got going on. You don't get any catharsis or build or anything that feels like real payoff. So we'll see where they go from here. But yeah, I'm with you for the most part. I kind of poked at MJF about, I think that, I don't necessarily think he's a bad promo, but like I said, I think he's an overrated promo and an underrated worker was my situation. But this was a bad situation for him in general. It's just, it just did not work. And Aria does not help. I'm sorry, but like, you know, I thought she was good in the match when she wrestled in the mixed tag match with them. I thought she actually looked fine there, but everything else, I mean, you know, I hate to say it, but maybe just don't let her talk so much or at all. And even then she looks uncomfortable. So it's just kind of difficult to
And again, and Selena is the lead heel. I mean, she pales in comparison to Selena Vega on when we had her on NXT and now on SmackDown. She fails in comparison to Katrina on Lucha Underground. So at best, she's like the third best Hispanic woman. And Vicky Guerrero is better than her, too.
Yeah.
So she doesn't have a whole lot of charisma to her, does she? Or am I just bashing because I just found the other ones way more entertaining?
She really doesn't. She honestly just really doesn't. And it's, you know, I kind of get it because MLW is probably pretty smart to play off of the Latino culture in Florida.
Especially out of Miami,
sure. It's a good way to do it. But, you could find people who are, you know, good in whatever race you're looking for. Like, they don't have to, you don't have to just pick the first one you find. But, you know.
Yeah, it almost feels like she got the job on a, you know, because they wanted, she was the only Hispanic person who came in for the role. Yeah, it's just like, you know, it's she fits the suit. I mean, it just doesn't work for me. And yeah, and when there's other ones out there doing it so much better, it just comes across as a cheap knockoff and a bad knockoff at that. And then we get a Tom Lawler interview. This is just good stuff. I mean, I like showing his wacky side to him. He's in a fucking street in Vegas. In the desert. I love it.
Doing the jump rope. It's awesome.
Yeah. Good stuff. Then we get the Simon Gotch challenge, and I liked how they explained why Tom Lawler's there. So I get points for the commentary here. And then he's facing Gangrel, and I liked how he got around not calling him Gangrel. And didn't call him by anybody. I don't think they called him a name at all. I thought this was a good, great surprise. I thought Gotch's European forearms were tremendous. And I thought it was an awesome 2-minute match. But I would have liked to see more out of it. It felt like, hey, we got Gangrel here. Let's do a little 2-minute match angle. And I don't know if it's going to lead to anything. Let's see. And I like Gotch doing these little challenge matches. But, for the most part, he's... The thing is, he's got to win and go on a big streak. And then the payoff is having a new star come out and tap him out. That's the fucking payoff on this. And I don't... That's the only way this gimmick works, and is to create a star eventually, and I don't know if they understand that's how it's supposed to work, and then Gangrel is not the guy you need who's the payoff to this. Yeah, it's a fun angle, and it was neat that he's biting him, but I think they're missing the big picture here, what the big payoff is, and they're getting caught off on with the minutia and stuff.
Yeah. It's like, it's a fun wrinkle, like you said. It's a fun wrinkle to have him bite him and play off of the thing. And Gotch still technically wins and within the time limit, but it doesn't pay into the big picture, which is the point.
Yeah.
And I thought Gangrel looked fine here. Gotch looked good. Everything was good. And I'd be interested in using this to set up a bigger match from them. But, yeah,
We're going to get a bigger match, I'm sure. But that, again, it's sidetracking what the big payoff is.
Right.
Which should be Gotch streamrolling guys, and then should be beating undercard guys until all of a sudden a guy who they want to debut gets this fucking big win, and it could be they could have used this to debut Myron Reed when he debuted, or some new talent they haven't played yet, and use it to springboard him to put him or get him over, and that's what this whole angle is for, and it seems like they're getting sidetracked on it.
Yeah, no, exactly.
We get an ACH promo, which leads us to ACH versus Davey Boy Smith. I was really excited about this because I like both guys and workers and showed a lot of potential. But, man, and the strikes were personal. But, man, way too fucking short. It was like,
yeah,
this really hurts ACH by game jobbing so quickly. I did not get it at all. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, Davey Boy Smith is a good big bad apple guy. I'm trying to remember the match, but there was a Wrestle Circus match he had last year, maybe early this year, that was phenomenal for that, just like a big fight.
I thought him and Moose.
Yes, that was it. Him and Moose had a great just brawl where he was showing off how he's a big badass, which he can do really well. And ACH is an underdog flyer who can show off some power game here as well with big German suplex, stuff like that. Totally could have been a really fun match and would have been a great match. I mean, if this had been an AAW title, defense, this could have been a great match with ACH going over, crowd goes wild for everything. But instead, it feels flat with, Bulldog just gets the win with the power slam. It seems like you're missing the point again. We talk about it. Seems like their idea is ACH and Rich Swann as a tag team and probably keeping it that way. While Davey Boy Smith in the Hart Foundation group is more focused as a singles or move forward, making that group look better. So I feel like definitely missing the boat here overall.
Yeah. And I didn't need a 20-minute match from him. I mean, I would love to have seen it, but I would have been happy if I would have gotten 8 minutes where it doesn't feel like a total destruction. That's what it felt here.
Right. And it didn't, it felt like I said, ACH is treated as like for singles, he's an afterthought.
Total fodder.
Just a guy to help get over it. And meanwhile, the angle and the storyline that you're building, it just seems like it would be better for, it would honestly would have been better for ACH to get the win here. Realistically, you're building up a storyline with the feud between him and he's trying to get redemption for his friend. I think you need to give him something here or else why do they keep going?
Exactly. Then we get a Conan interview. Conan still good on the mic. The only thing is, he just doesn't seem as hip as he once was. So he might maybe need to, freshen up his character, too.
Yeah, for sure.
I can totally buy what he's doing, but, you know, maybe make him as the gangster father of the gangster, the, you know, like that old, the El Patron, or like the retired motorcycle gang leader type thing, you know. He just needs, he just can't be hip when you're that old. It just doesn't work.
Yeah. I like him teasing, you know, the history with him and La Parca, though. I thought, or LA yeah. Park. I liked that, but yeah, I totally agree.
And then we get a really kick-ass main event here of Pentagon Jr. in LA Park, and I really liked this. Mask ripping. The only thing I didn't like here is Park is so over, he's getting cheered, and that's against Pentagon, who is super over. So that's how over LA Park is. Huge dive by Pentagon. And then Pentagon returns the favor, and he's ripping up a Park's mask. We got weapon shots. We get a stupid "this is awesome" chant during a wild fucking brawl. What type of fucking dumbass fans, instead of getting immersed in this wild ass brawl, they're chanting "this is awesome"? That shit's safe to be saved for fucking little high spotty bullshit stuff. This is pretty damn vicious brawl. So I was really offended at that. The table spot should have been a finish, though. And then we pretty much see LA Park challenge the Lucha Brothers, and LA Park's bringing his son in, and they're gonna have a tag match. So that could be interesting too. I love this match, man. I thought it's not as good as like the high end LA Park brawls with Roosh. But this is pretty damn awesome. I still gave it 4 stars. Really impressed with it. And yeah, they did a hell of a job. And back-to-back weeks of having really high-end main events. And, you know, both of them had the Lucha Brothers in it. Had something to do with it. What you think, man, of it, buddy?
Yeah, I'm with you. And it's just goes to show, like, my thing that I always say with my issues with Lucha is Lucha production. Because this is, you know, in the MLW production, I think LA Park is great. You know, my problem is a lot of times the Lucha shows, the crowds, they're almost worse in some ways than these crowds chanting, you know, whatever, "this is awesome," which you can't, or at least I can't understand what they're chanting at the crowds. But a lot of times the crowds in Lucha shows seem either disinterested or, you know, to the point of trying to get themselves over, trying to start fights and the riots that everyone talks about. And it sometimes takes away from the match a little bit to me, but I get it. Cause you're getting the heat and I can't argue with that. Plus, you know, editing and stuff being chopped to shit makes it hard for me to follow and just so many issues. But this right here, I mean, because it's presented in a way where, you know, you get to see pretty much everything. You see the storyline that it's going. The crowd is, you know, obviously not great. But they have, like, some structure, good stuff. The issue, I think, LA Park, people talking about LA Park as the wrestler of the year for 2018, I think when you talk about it, the guy, in some ways, I get it because he's over and it works and he's drawing huge houses and you kind of can't argue with it, but the guy kind of breaks the kayfabe and the psychology of wrestling by refusing to just be a babyface and continue to wrestle as a heel in a lot of ways and be presented as a heel, but he's so over with the crowd and he intentionally plays it up to get the crowd into him that it does kind of hurt in that regard, to where I can't think of him as the wrestler of the year. Now, as a guy who should be in the Hall of Fame, 100%. I don't think that there's any question that he's got a very strong, like, Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame case. Just with the level of draw that he's been for the amount of time that he has, the level of matches that he has, you talked about it, the more over guy in this show just showing up, going against one of the top guys in the company. We talked about top three guys who the company should be featured and built around, and he comes in and he automatically feels like a bigger star. Brings the heat, brings the violence. That's one thing I give a lot of credit to LA Park too, is a match can come in kind of cold. I talked about it last week with the match with Phoenix and Low-key, that it kind of felt like, why are they having a blood feud brawl? But LA Park, he brings a believability to that, to me, where I automatically get into it, that this should be a big bloody brawl, that they just hate each other, because I just buy into his kind of viciousness, and his why he's acting like this makes sense with his character and everything. Big table spot with the dive to the floor. Interesting the way the camera angle did a good job you know, not picking up that it looked like the table didn't break for the dive for Pentagon, the angle that they did. So that was a good job there, because you have to really pay attention to see that the spot didn't come off the way that they were hoping for. So again, where I talk about the good presentation, the spear through the table off the top rope definitely should have been the finish right there. That was just huge and crazy. Great brawl. It was interesting because there's lots of mask ripping, but no blood, especially with the amount of gimmicks and everything that's going on. Meanwhile, the match the week before, Phoenix was bleeding all over the place, which is, you know, weird that they pulled that off. And I say one detail of this that I kind of liked and goes in favor of Serena De La Renta was I thought that her coming out with the clothes that intentionally matched Pentagon and the commentary talking about she had custom-made gear to fit or, you know, outfit to match Pentagon, it worked, and it helped the presentation of Pentagon, I think, to feel important coming in here. Not that he wouldn't have already, but I think it just added to it a little bit. So I give her some credit there, but, like, that's valet stuff. And she's being presented as, you know, the top man. She's being presented as Gary Hart, basically, and she comes across, like, you know, I don't know, Miss Elizabeth or something, and that's not necessarily, you know, the best situation there. But yeah, I'm with you. Great match, great main event back to back. Lucha Brothers are, you know, again, backbone of the promotion, the guys that they should be doing everything they can to keep, now that they're not going to WWE, as a lot of people are rumoring. Who knows what's really happening with that? But yeah, these guys, they deliver solidly back to back, two shows, singles matches, back to back, great stuff. And you can have them tag, and they have great matches. So they're utility players that you really should be focusing on as much as you can.
For sure. Overall, I enjoyed the show because I thought there was a lot of, you know, a lot of the matches didn't hit early, but I thought, again, the main event, it delivered.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, the most you can ask for a lot of times on these TV shows when you're not being completely spoiled by the level of talent that's in NXT, is to have some matches and to have, like, a really good main event. I mean, that's kind of the history of TV wrestling, right?
Yep. And LA Park fit the role. She brought him in as her bounty guy. So it made sense for them to have that wild brawl. And then became personal. So, yeah, I totally got into it. On that note, let's move over to NXT. And, man, this is built up to the big three-way at the end. But, this opened up, and it was a totally whack show right off the bat, where we get Ciampa. He's out promoing. And it looks like he's challenging Double Team Dream. He comes out, and so, like, yo, are they finally making Dream a full-fledged babyface, even though they had fought it for the last year? And Nikki Cross comes out, and then it's all hell breaks loose, and segment went way too long. It was actively bad once Nikki Cross came out. I mean, it was really bad at that point, and then we even had Ciampa going to Inside Baseball by mentioning you're not tough enough for Velvet Team Dream. So, yeah, it just became this melting pot of shit. What did you think?
Yeah, it's interesting because I was just listening to the Torch, and Wade was talking about the Aries and Johnny Mundo stuff that's going on in TNA, where they're like feuding with each other on Twitter and then on TV and possibly crossing lines with each other that they shouldn't be, and is it work, is it a shoot, and all that. And he was talking about there's some things that you know you're kind of dancing on that razor's edge of doing a good promo and then also actually hurting the guy you're going against. And the Dream, I think, should not be referenced in the same breath as the Patrick Clark from Tough Enough. I get what you're saying. I don't know if I say too Inside Baseball necessarily, because I feel like Tough Enough was presented as something that exists, but I think that it's so far separate from him that it's not a good thing to reference for him. So I agree that it was bad either way. The Dream turn here is really fucking annoying for me, especially because you talked about that he should have turned face a long time ago. And part of it, too, is that I hate to say it, and maybe I'm just being like a little bit too like SJW or something, but it feels, this being his turn, feels a little bit too like they're playing into a certain kind of stereotype, with the idea that this turn started because he was like gossiping to the microphones about how he thinks that Tommaso Ciampa did the attack on Black. And it's like, with everything else that's gone on with this guy and how much the crowd loves him, his babyface thing has to be him kind of talking some shit, dishing some dirt on the microphone that really stuck in Ciampa's craw that made him come after him. I don't know. That's a weird way to turn a guy babyface. on top of the fact that I feel like it plays into like a little bit of the effeminate stereotype that they do with him, on top of the fact it's just a really weak way to make a guy a babyface. Like, this guy became a babyface because he was talking shit on a heel. Like, that's not, that doesn't work for me. Like, it doesn't feel like a guy I want to get behind just because now a heel wants to fight him because he was saying mean things about him. Like, that's just ridiculous. Nikki coming out, I don't know, like, the crowd chanting she knows really, really annoyed me in the sing-songy way. And like, it almost could have been serious, but she was so over the top that I can't blame them for not taking her serious. But that really blew away any shreds of seriousness to the fucking angle completely. So a lot of issues with this angle for me. And what sucks is a lot of decent performances. Like, everyone did their roles well, but it just was flawed from the beginning, so it wasn't going to work.
Yep. Keith Lee versus Kona Reeves. You know, this is just a dominating squash for Lee, and again, it feels like they're writing off the Kona Reeves character.
Right. My only argument, or my only critique would be it felt like Kona Reeves got a little bit too much, but that would be it. You know, yeah.
Shayna Baszler package, I thought this was good. I like her. I like giving, he gives her character layers with the loss, and I kind of like how she's claiming she didn't really lose that, Kairi didn't really win. It was Shayna made the mistake, and so it was her mistake, not her loss. I enjoyed this. I thought it was really neat, and gives her another, gives the character another layer, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, no, definitely. And it was nice to have that UFC kind of embedded vibe, which was good. And yeah, it gives a little bit more depth on her, and I like teasing. You see that she's training with the horsewomen, and you just kind of buy into her. And she kind of mentioned that before about like it was my mistake, not her win. And I like that they continue to play that up more, because that it fits her character that she would say something like that.
Yeah, exactly, and it's a kind of a heel thing to say too. Kairi Sane interview. This just sucked. You know, she's just not, her English isn't strong enough. I'm all for, again, like I said, do two takes. One with her doing Japanese, and let her and do closed captioning underneath, and then let her practice the English. They don't have no reason to air it if it's not ready for prime time, and that's what it felt like here.
Right.
It felt like she had no idea what they were saying, and this is her scripted answer. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. And it's not that I have a problem with people who, you know, don't speak English well or something like right. that. It's like, it just, you're presenting a product, and I want her to come across strong. And you don't come across strong when you're shaky in what you're saying.
Right. And heck, we're not saying not talking. I mean, she can do it in Japanese, and just give us a voice under, you know, a closed caption, just like how they do on the Japanese television when they're interviewing Chris Jericho in New Japan or what have you. Steve, we get a Lord Regal interview. Then Cassius Ohno comes out, and, you know, we get this weird exchange between them, and Nikki Cross comes out and knows what he did. So now Cassius must have done something, or, I mean, but this is becoming just, it's almost becoming a show-long joke at this point. But you can tell he's teasing because he drops some Matt Riddle references, so it looks like he wants a Matt Riddle, so that'll be a fun match because we know they can have bangers, and that's been Hero's job, is to put over the new talent. So why not put over Matt Riddle, even though they're saying he's this is a new Cassius Ohno who should be on top and doesn't put people over. That's what he's gonna do.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah. This was, I guess, fine, but yeah, it does feel like they're leaning almost to comedy levels with the Nikki Cross stuff, which, I mean, again, it's not to say that she's bad, it's just I don't care about this, you know. Like, she's great, honestly, but playing this role, I don't get into her, and I think she should be serious and treated bigger. And this stuff is weird, like the way they're kind of teasing at, you know, Matt Riddle stuff that he's teasing at, plus also maybe he did something now, and so it's like between Ciampa and Ohno, and what, you know, what's going to be the payoff? What's the kind of the delivery here? And I'm not excited. Like, I because the build feels kind of cheesy and corny and is just going so long and annoying. It's just like I automatically am kind of assuming that the payoff isn't going to be worth dealing with all this, to where I'm like excited to see where it goes.
I totally agree. Totally agree. Where are we at here? Then we get a Cassius Ohno. We get the War Raiders, an Undisputed Era package. You know, I thought this was well done, but we've kind of seen it.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah, it feels like there's not enough here to be doing a package for that, but then they do it, and they're kind of, it feels like they're just stretching the little bit of interaction that these guys have had, and there hasn't been much angle or anything. It's like, it just feels like all that happened is War Raiders came in and wanted the tag titles, and then that was it. And there hasn't, gotcha. there's no personal issue here.
Yep. All right. Then we got Adam Cole, Pete Dunne, and Ricochet in a match heavily pushed. What do you think about it?
Big fireworks, obviously. I really did not like the opening. Just felt so contrived.
Right? You know, it seemed like the crowd didn't give a flying fuck about any hold they were putting on each other.
Right, and I can't blame them. But yeah, the opening just... They double-team Adam Cole, and it doesn't seem to matter. He instantly is in control. Then they're trading who's going against who back and forth until finally, you know, every permutation of the three has to get their second to do a couple things. And I don't know. It just – it's like people talk about the stereotypical three-way thing, and I – for a long time, I really didn't have a big issue with it. But this just felt so glaring, the way what they were doing and the setup. And then, yeah, I mean, the stuff – nobody, it didn't feel like there was a lot of consequence to anything until we get into the big, you know, near falls stuff, which there was some good teases of near falls and stuff that the crowd is buying on, but it does feel like there was no foundation. By the time you got to all that, they're just kind of doing it. What about
that one spot where have Pete Dunne trying to put like Adam Cole and maybe a surfboard. And it looks like Ricochet is supposed to do something, but because it took so long to put him in the hold, Ricochet is like, oh, no, hold on, I'll just watch.
Yeah.
Which looked like it was him covering up for how long the spot was developing. Because they all looking at each other like, aren't you supposed to be kicking him at this point?
Yeah, exactly. Like,
it was pretty bad, but go on.
Yeah, and... The double super Rana off the top is like, again, super contrived. I love, this is the first time I think I've ever seen Pete Dunne blow a reverse Rana, but I think he may have flown too close to the sun here. They're trying to do that step up Rana style, but with the reverse Rana, and he looks sloppy and awkward on it. And Pete's usually spot on with those every time. So there was a lot of issues, and it's funny because all three of these guys have had good matches with each other, but in the three way, there was some clunkiness, and it's just, it's so weird. Like I said, I don't really think about it because for me, multi-man stuff, I have never gotten as perturbed as I hear a lot of other people say about it, but this was a really bad case of it where it just, this as a multi-man did not work. These guys didn't have three-way chemistry in a lot of ways. And
not at all. I'm agree with you. It was a lot of my turn, your turn. Okay, our turns. Okay, you're out, you're in.
Right.
You know, it was, glaringly bad.
Right.
And I think we're going to be the low man. I think there's going to be a lot of love for this match in other places. Yeah.
There was a lot of just ridiculous. One thing that I did like as a wrinkle was like everyone else is hitting a lot of cool spots and signature stuff. And Adam Cole, one of his like signature key standout spots was hitting a schoolboy and putting his feet on the ropes. I just thought that was funny as like his showcase spot of the match.
Right.
But yeah, you know, stuff like that. The finish I found a little bit goofy also with the, you know, catching the 450 on Dunne while he's pinning Cole, which I also found interesting because, you know, you just had Ricochet and Pete Dunne have a match last week or, you know, was it the week before where, like, you couldn't have a finish and then now Ricochet can just pin Pete Dunne? I don't, you know, it just feels
well,
so
I think
weird.
I think the only title on the line here was Ricochet.
Right. Yeah, I get that, but it makes that more
and
glaring.
I think this is their best thing they could come up with where it protected all three, where Dunne doesn't beat Adam Cole, but he was about to, and he gets stunned out of nowhere by Ricochet, and so it's kind of like, you know, it was like the closest thing they could come to for a tie.
Yeah, no, I know, but I think it just becomes more glaring, especially because it's like one title is on the line, so the guy who has that championship pins the other guy that he couldn't beat the week before.
Yeah.
You know? So it just, to me, it really shows off how contrived the whole situation.
I thought it was pretty impressive, though. He almost went like almost corner to corner on that damn flip dive and stuff.
Right. Which, I mean, hey, no one has said that Ricochet is not athletic, right?
Right. Yeah, but yeah, we're totally going to be on the low end on this because, I mean, I'm sure a lot of people are going to love how, oh, look at all the great dives and big moves. And there was a lot of that. And but, you know, it felt like the first half of the match had no consequences whatsoever. And it felt like they were just biding time. I think it would be better off if they just built Rowan right to the finish, honestly, and spent 10 minutes going into the finish. Then 18 minutes of 8 minutes of just total bullshit that the crowd did not want to see any fucking mat work whatsoever. And yeah, I mean, it was quiet to the point where Ricochet almost had to start waving to the crowd, begging them to start cheering. So yeah, I mean, it was still a good match. Don't get me wrong, but it was such a flawed match.
Right.
So many flaws in it.
Well, what's interesting too is that a real key spot that I always mention, especially in Pete Dunne matches with multiple people, is, you know, the double submission always gets over huge. But with this crowd, I don't know if it would have, and he never really did it. So it was probably smart.
Well, he tried that double half crab, which looked ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah, but yeah, the crowd just didn't get into it, you know.
Yeah. That's NXT, folks. Check out ProWrestling.com to explore other podcasts, along with match reviews, features, and retrospective reviews of wrestling books, video games and matches, playlists, wrestler appearances, and non-wrestling TV shows and movies, and more. You can also join the conversation by signing up at Pro Wrestling Only forums. We've been online for over a decade, and with over 2,000 registered members and an archive of over 4 million threads, our message board is a vibrant community all its own. Whether you want to talk about a specific match in our match discussion archive, take a deep dive in the Microskip forum, or discuss more general topics from wrestlers past and present, check it all out of this and more at ProWrestlingOnly.com. And we'll be right back, and we'll be looking at SUP, the most recent show of Southern Underground Pro that happened recently. And it's titled, let me go see what it's titled real quick. It is titled Don't Look in the Basement. And we'll be right back with Southern Underground Pro, Don't Look in the Basement. And we are back with Southern Underground Pro, Don't Look in the Basement. And I mean, I really like the show. What about you?
Yeah, I enjoyed the show. There was some stuff that was a little head-scratching, I would say. But the work and the matches themselves, for the most part, delivered. And I thought, you know, we'll get into it as we talk about it. But there was one thing that I kind of had heard or knew about that I thought that I was questioning, and I thought they pulled it off perfectly. So, you know, kudos for that. But, yeah, I really enjoyed the show. And SUP is a fun show to watch, honestly. Has a really good, interesting vibe. It is interesting, or, you know, a credit to them that they were able to change their kind of venue. Originally, that bar venue that they had kind of gave it a certain vibe and made it stand out in a certain way, and they've transitioned to the basement, which I think is actually Basement East, I guess is what they call it. And this basement venue has, you know, just as much, brings as much character to the show in its own way. So really good that they were able to transition that way and not lose any of the charm of the company.
And I think it helps getting rid of that one gal who was on, was the announcer.
Yeah. I, you know, hate to say it, but yeah, I agree.
She was annoying as hell, so now she's gone. I feel like she's good, gone for good, so that's good. Yeah, and I'm liking the talent they're booking. I like the commentating. I think they do a good job. And stuff, yeah. So to me, it's just really developing, and it's just good, solid wrestling shows. We open up with Cajun Crawdad versus Joshua Bishop. I thought this was a really fun opener, and I'm all for having another wacky character in wrestling, in Cajun Crawdad, and have him in an opening match that goes under 5 minutes, which is perfect. Get people, get yourself your beer. And speaking of beer, I see my boy Ben with a beer, and there's a shocker. I'd be more shocked to see him without one. You know, and then we see Cajun Crawdad getting chopped, and we see Matt Action gets in on it and then lights him up. This overall fun stuff. Fun opener. And then, you know, post-match, Alley Cat attacks Joshua Bishop because he plays Slutty Cat. So, you know, overall fun stuff. What do you think?
Yeah, good opener. I gave it, you know, a star and three quarter just because it was quick and it was kind of goofy and fun. And it was even listed as a dark match, which is, this is the smart way to do a dark match where it feels like it, you know, it's really there for people to be able to file in and not feel like they're missing anything too much. Get the crowd involved. So that's always a good thing. Like I've said, like, about PWG openers, it's not the same anymore without Brian Cage, which normally this flies in the face of my concept of wrestling in general, but Cage was the great opener for PWG because he didn't give a fuck about the crowd and he was just going to do his spots. And the PWG crowd and most wrestling crowds, I think, when they get into the show for the first time, they're really excited about the idea of being at a wrestling show more than they are about watching wrestling. And yeah. So the opening match, if you let them in PWG, they will just chant back and forth and take over the whole match with their own bullshit, because that's what going to a wrestling show means for them. And you really just kind of waste time. So that's why something like this, where you get the crowd involved by chopping him and they're getting into it and they're excited, it kind of gets them out of their headspace of just being like, ooh, I'm at a wrestling show, and now they're instantly, what the hell is going on? I'm here, I'm in this now, and they're going to be more invested in the show overall, which may be giving too much credit to these guys for the psychology of what they're putting together, but I think it for to suit that role, it did it perfectly, which is, yeah, get the crowd out of their own head and into the wrestling show, which from that point on, I would say that they were. But that's also to say the sub crowd has been good pretty much the whole way through. I can't think of a time that we watched a sub show where I wouldn't say that the crowd was good. Like, they're into the wrestling. They're excited. They cheer for what they're supposed to cheer. They definitely give heat to the bad guys. Maybe sometimes they give heat a little bit too easy to the bad guys, and that becomes tempting for the company to want to make everything about heat, heat, heat. Because I understand when you're getting a reaction, you know, you want to continue to follow that reaction. But yeah, really, really good opener.
Then we get the Trick or Treat Battle Royal that takes place in September. you know, I got to put that shot in. I guess they're not running in October. What did you think?
Yeah, this was good. Very, like I said, I was wondering about the angle that they're pulling here, obviously, built off of this with Marco winning. I thought they did a good job, kind of, you know, it's basic Battle Royal stuff to open up. Then you get the Short Ghost, famous from the Commonwealth Cup, coming back out. And it's impressive because somehow Marco Stunt is actually taller than shorter than Short Ghost. You know, if you get that reference, then you know that Short Ghost is actually a child. This is, I guess, some kind of angle that I was not privy to, but I heard him mentioning about someone trolling on social media. I don't know if you followed that at all. Did you know what the ghost was in reference to?
No, I'm not. I really know.
Yeah, so it was kind of difficult for me to understand the point of that, but whatever. It was over pretty quick. You get Slutty Cat coming back out. Don't necessarily know how I feel about that, but then once kind of that's over, I liked the finish. You got Marco and Alley Cat working together. I thought that was pretty good, having them team up against the production guys, just because realistically, in a lot of ways, I think Marco and Alley are probably the top baby faces in this company. It's weird to kind of say, but their baby face side is pretty short. I mean, Dom obviously would be the top baby face.
Well, but, yeah, I mean, now he's a heel, right?
Yeah, but now he's a heel.
Spoiler, but yeah.
Yeah, so comparatively, I mean, if you look at it,
I guess AJ Gray, maybe?
Maybe AJ Gray, I guess you could argue, is at that level. But yeah, in a lot of ways, Marco and Ali are like the top baby, or, you know, two of the probably top baby faces in the company. So having them team up there was, I think, good. And then Marco gets the win for the crowd to get super excited. And obviously, he's the perfect guy to win this. If you're going to do a trick or treat street fight or battle royal, who's gonna win but the Mr. Fun Size, right?
Yep. Yeah, I'm okay. I thought it was okay. Nothing, you know, it's a battle royal.
Yeah. I give it 2 stars on the battle royal scale.
Yeah, it was all right. Then we got Jake Parnell versus Joey Lynch. You know, I like Dylan really putting over the importance of the win on commentary here. But I was, man, really kind of disappointed in this match. I had high expectations. It was good, solid stuff. But, man, I was shocked how short it was. And I mean, I'll go 2 stars because the work was so solid. But man, I was expecting a lot more from these two. What did you think?
Yeah, I went 2.25, especially because it felt like, again, two guys who have matches that have good backbone, and this one completely skipped it. It felt like from the moment the bell rang, they were going into the hot finish, which they're both these guys are obviously very good at that. But they're also great at having matches that build and tell stories and you get into and you have some backbone to what's going on, and they just completely skipped that here. And I don't know if they're cut on time. The match was pretty quick. But I thought that it was, you know, it was good for that, but it felt like I was watching, you know, the last however many minutes of like a much longer match, instead of really getting the full thing here.
And yeah, it felt like it was joining progress.
Yeah, exactly. Which I don't want to join anything that's a progress nowadays, cause that promotion sucks. Yeah. And then the finish felt like it was from a different, you know, from a longer match too. Cause it was like, what? I don't understand Parnell getting the win with the feet on the ropes. It didn't play into anything to me, really, to where I'm like understanding what I'm supposed to get from that. So yeah, if there had been, I don't know, some kind of build in the beginning that made that make sense in the end, then I would have got into it more. But I didn't feel like a payoff in any way. It felt really weird.
I'm with you. And then we get AJ Gray and Trip Cassidy and Kerry Awful versus O'Shea Edwards, Brett Eisen. Kurt Stallion had car problems, did not make it. So what happens here?
A lot of funkiness is what happens here. I really liked the opening, where, you know, the Bad Apple team, O'Shea and Eisen, take out Kerry Awful and then just start going to town.
And that was very important because they needed to get the psychology right in this goddamn match. Right. Because, yeah, having a handicap match of three faces versus two heels was not going to work. So, God bless them for realizing that and getting out of that as quickly as possible.
Right. I mean, for me, obviously, this is, you know, people can say it's biased or whatever a little bit, but it is a bummer to me that the guy that you take out from the babyface team is Kerry, honestly, just because I like Kerry a lot as a wrestler. And, you know, we're friendly.
But he does come back for the big comeback. So
he gets back in there, and I'll give him that. But I just, yeah, I would have. I mean, I know that I think that probably they wanted the focus to be AJ Gray. Clearly, they want AJ Gray to be kind of the focus guy. But I don't know. Like, I think he would have gotten more focused by being the big hot comeback Spirit of 76 guy rather than being the guy who was in the match. Like, he looked strong at times and. Again, I think that Eisen and O'Shea look amazing on offense. They really just kick the shit out of both of them, and I think that that's great. But yeah, I just, you know, me personally, I'm gonna be more excited to see more Kerry, just because I think Kerry's a really good wrestler, honestly. So Trip gets taken out by, I think it's Craig Mitchell, which is I don't even know where this guy comes from, what his issues are with Kerry Awful, what his connection is to the guys who are attacking. The Carnage.
Yeah, I mean, he's part of the heel group, kind of.
Right.
He's not an actual part of the group, but he's like kind of like a Jimmy Garvin to the Freebirds.
Right. And I don't know. I think we're kind of in an era where that doesn't work as well for me. It just feels a little bit contrived to be like all heels work together and all baby faces work together kind of thing. But yeah, Kerry coming back in was good, but it felt like, you know, he had the, like I said, the big Spirit of 76 spot and the hot tag and all that. But then it felt like he was gone again pretty quick. You know, it makes sense, though. Like I said, Eisen and O'Shea's offense looked great. So them double teaming him and he's dead again is pretty good. But it just felt like.
And again, I kind of agree with them having, I mean, I'm trying to make the best out of this because, I mean, bottom line, not having Stallion there just fucked up everything.
Yes.
And I think you had to usher Kerry out again because you just couldn't have him have a 3-on-2 advantage, you know?
Right. I mean, even with Trip gone, I don't know. Like, maybe you could have. I don't know. I don't know. This match, I liked the work here. I really liked Eisen and O'Shea a lot. And I thought that they did a great job of working as a heel team that was at an advantage. And you, like you said, they helped kind of catch the psychology and make it make sense. But it's still, it was an uphill battle. I gave the match 3 stars for the work because I really did enjoy the work. And I thought that Kerry's hot tag was great. So was the kind of second hot tag from AJ Gray. He looked phenomenal there, all on fire, which is, I mean, I'll be honest, AJ Gray's not a guy I'm high on, especially not now. I've like been pretty critical of him, but I thought he was good here for his hot tag and for his selling when he was in peril and all that. He got emotion into, you know, he got me emotionally invested in the match. But yeah, it was an uphill battle to try to deal with the fact that you're missing a guy, and not just a guy. I mean, Kurt Stallion felt like the focus of this angle.
He was the ace of the group. He was the Ric Flair. He was the Hulk Hogan or the Mega Powers. He was the he was the linchpin.
Yeah, and having him gone really hurts. And
yeah, it hurt.
I don't know what they could have done.
They did all they could to cover it. I mean, I get it. And I mean, they played up, well, he's never coming back until he gets the title shot, blah, blah, blah. You know, doing all this stuff, you know, making him a diva. But it just still bottom line, it hurt. I enjoyed it too. I hear 2 and 3 and 4, so I'm with you. I like the work. I thought they did a good job trying as well as they could covering Stallion's absence. I thought, you know, taking Kerry off out early was key to getting the psychology right. Iceman is such a believable heel. Edwards is a scary motherfucker.
Edwards I could buy as a heel or a babyface. That's a good point. Iceman, I think, 100% heel. But O'Shea, yes. Edwards, I could buy as a heel or a babyface, but he's just scary no matter what.
Yeah, and O'Shea's got to be in the right I think he's got to be in the right setting to be a great babyface. It depends on where he's working and how he's working, but yeah, he's just a scary motherfucker. He has a body where you can buy into him as a babyface, but he's still. I think where he's working would have a lot to tell on how great of a babyface he is. But I think he's a natural heel though. Iceman is a straight heel. There's no liking.
Yeah.
Redeemable about him. He looks like a guy who should be in a Nazi cult, a skinhead group, beating up Jewish people. You know, he just comes across as that type of racist. And I know it has nothing to do with his gimmick at all. It's not even part of it, but he just comes across like that guy you just don't like. And you know he's bad news. I thought the heat on Gray was really well done. All the stuff they were doing to him looked really hurty. I like Mitchell taking out Cassidy to make it now 2-on-1. And then Kerry Offal comes out for the hot tag to even it up again. The match I felt went a little long in spots. But yeah, I gave it 2 3/4. And I thought they did. I thought the workers, did all they could, and I thought the booking of the company did all they could to really overcompensate for the Kurt Stallion car issue. Then we got Gary J versus Craig Mitchell. I give this 3.25. Gary J with multiple dives early. Mitchell is a good worker who gets his character over here. Love the beard Irish whip spot because this is a douchey thing to do. I bought the small package of the finish in the match. I thought these guys just worked really well together. 3.25. What do you think of the match?
Yeah, I gave it 3 even. The stuff that stood out to me was the same stuff you mentioned. The beard Irish whip was good. I liked the airplane spin into the post. I thought that was a cool little spot. Rolling elbow from Gary. He collapses into the pin. I thought was a cool spot. Just really good fight between the two. Mitchell looked solid. Gary J, obviously, phenomenal seller, phenomenal kind of, you know, in the clinch kind of wrestler, fighter type guy. Really, really good action. And the kind of match that helps put, again, this is something I think I've said about Gary J a few times, especially in the SCI setting, but here too. Having guys do this kind of match on the mid-card helps put over the prestige of the company as a whole. And Gary J, I think he's Mr. that. Like, honestly, Gary J is a guy who really helps your company feel more important because he makes his matches feel very important with just the way that he puts his body on the line and everything he does. Even if it's a work, but I buy into him. I really do. The way that he sells and everything he does, I buy into it that he's really going out there and murdering himself every night just for the right to get to wrestle here. And it does help, to me, always establish credibility in a company to have a guy like that.
That's a good point. Then we get Teddy King versus the Brickster. What do you think of this match?
Brickster is so fucking over. you know, obviously he's very green, but this felt like really cool, kind of like feud elevating gimmick match. These guys have been kind of going at each other for a bit, but it felt like the stakes of this match helped make both guys feel bigger coming out of it. Teddy King was a guy I was like, whatever. He just seemed like whatever, just bland. But now I'm kind of more invested in him. Brixter was a guy that I was like, all right, we'll see how he does. He had that first good match with Kerry Offal that we saw, but I was a little shaky on him. Now I'm honestly more bullish on him than probably a lot of people. He feels like, it's talking about kind of the, you know, the babyface side of things in this company. He feels like a guy who could be at the top of the babyface side of things.
On the baby, yeah, he could be the baby top babyface in the company right now. I wouldn't argue that.
Yeah, he's just so over. Great work here. I thought they did a good job with the Legos. And coming into it, Lego match, I was not excited. I was, in a lot of ways, annoyed. And I was kind of like, you know, I don't know how this is going to go. But they did a good job, honestly. And it felt like a real fight with real stakes, real good hard-hitting action. I gave it 3.25, sorry. Yeah, I thought that these guys really pulled this off in a way that I would not expect. And then I think that, like I said, it helps elevate both guys coming out of it. They both feel more important. And the finish even helped with that. Teddy King gets even more heel heat in a real way, having his kind of guy, his protege, come in and ignore or kind of get the attention of Brixter and cost him the match. I wouldn't say that was the perfect finish. It did feel a little cheap, but especially because Brixter loses just from getting distracted, which is not great. But still, I think it was not necessary. I don't think it was a terrible finish.
I like the finish because I think his inexperience, it works for his inexperience level.
That's true.
And it's a complete fuck finish where, I mean, you're not hurting your baby face because it took two guys to do it.
Yeah, that's very fair. And honestly, that's probably the most concise way to describe how I feel about it. And, you know, I was trying to kind of talk through it myself, and I even talked myself into thinking it had some flaws, but it did work, especially because he is so green.
Agreed. I give it 2.5. Brixter shows you that 80s style charismatic baby faces can get over. And that's what he is. He's a throwback. And he's Hulk Hogan. He's Lex Luger. He's Road Warrior Hawk. He's one of those guys, big, big, freaking weird hair. You know. I don't call it weird because it's just not. It's not weird. Is not even the right word for it. It's just flowing locks. He could be on the cover. He could be Fabio on the cover of a romance novel. And it just shows you it's not always about the cool flips and stuff he can do. It's about the character, and he connects to the crowd, and he'll have a longer career than a lot of guys because he's not going to blow his knee out going through a table to get into This Is Awesome chant. Maybe he will, but I hope not. I was with you when I saw a Lego match, no rules. I rolled my eyes, but you know what? It works for this promotion. It works for this atmosphere. Like the fact they put over Legos as weapons. They never treat the Legos as a farce. But I despise the whole sitting in the chair, and that's where I took points down in the match, where these guys are sitting in the chairs, exchanging shot spot, and then they start passing a bat back and forth to each other. It was even worse. That took the match down from this 3-star level for me because it just drove me fucking nuts. And I enjoyed, like, I liked the finish. I thought it was a good fuck finish for the Brixter. And we get a good post match promo from Teddy King, which I enjoyed and got him heat. So it worked. And then we go down to the final two matches. And I thought, no, the final two out of the three matches. This next one, Tracy Williams versus Kevin Koo, was a burnt banger. I give it 3.75. I like how they keep track of Tracy Williams' defenses. I think that's a way to elevate the belt and make it seem more grand. Makes the title grander. I like Williams. It looks like he's targeting the arm early, but he goes away from it. dealing out price process, nice counters. Love Kuz forward clip. You don't really see that when you, most of the time you see the back hitting, you clip the back of the leg, but he clipped the front of the leg. I enjoyed that. Back and forth action. The DDT into the top ropes needs to be a finish. Love Dylan's explanation of the kick out, which was, I believe, Dylan saying, probably thinking the same thing, like, yeah, that should have been a finish, which is explaining how his body was 3/4 of the way over, how that helped him kick out. So, Dylan, I give him props for saving that. Big reaction to Kuz Tornado Maple Leaf for the half crab. I bought the powerbomb backbreaker as a finish. Really good stuff. I just wish, my biggest complaint about it, which is not even a complaint because the match kicked ass, was I wish we'd have a little longer heat and shine segments. It felt a little my turn, your turnish a little bit, but not blatantly bad in any way. But man, it was a good hard hitting match between two guys. Williams is really good, and Koo, man, he's really putting together. He's really getting better and showing a lot more. His intensity is improving. His strikes look really crisp. He's coming up with some unique offense. Yeah, I think next year it could be a Kevin Koo breakout year. And I wouldn't be surprised to see him in SCI next year. What do you think of the match?
Yeah, you kind of echoed a lot of the stuff that I felt there. I liked it a little bit more than you. I gave it 4 stars. Williams is really doing well as this Powerbomb TV champion, which is, you know, impressive because I thought of him as a downgrade from Grisham, personally.
Yeah.
I was really into Grisham's title reign, and I kind of didn't like it. I also didn't like that I talked about it when we were doing the Nova Pro tournament, that he really is starting to feel more like a third-rate version of, like, all these other guys, Gary J., Kevin Koo, Parnell, all that, where he's not focusing on his grappling and his technical side, which I thought made him stand out. But he's really developing into it for a champion, especially in settings like this, for a big fight feel that really feels like a championship fight, not just a wrestling match, which Koo brings in spades to every match that he has. I mean, the guy has got it when it comes to having a match that feels like a fight. Talked about his aggression and his violence level always being turned up to 10. He really comes across like just a big bad apple, stealing phrases from you. The Dr. Bomb into the knees, kind of, you know, variation of the Project Ciampa, is fantastic for a guy like Kevin Koo, I think, as his finish, which he's developing and using more and more to where people buy into it, even buy into it here as a near fall. Because it's just so much more chaotic than, like, the actual Project Ciampa version, where it's like a clean powerbomb. This one, he's got the twisting and the spinning, and they come down on the knees, and it's just like so. It's just all flurry. It's total chaos. And I think that kind of fits with Kevin Koo's total overall style. It's really, you know, controlled frenzy like Kofi Kingston. It's calculated chaos where he takes advantage of just this raw energy that he has, that comes across just like a violent meanness, that makes him, yeah, come across scary at times as a guy who could kick your ass. We talked about it with the tag team with Dom. But, yeah, he comes across just someone to be scared of, chaotic, violent. Big year for him next year, I think, for sure. A guy that mentioned it after seeing him a few times, a guy who I'm really excited to continue watching more and more of. So yeah, Williams looked great. The DDT on the top rope, I agree, and I've agreed for a long time. It was, you know, famously a couple years back, Riddle versus Tracy Williams was my, you know, WrestleMania weekend match of the weekend. And when he hit that big corner DDT like that, I always, like, great near fall, always buy into it, think it should be a finish. I'm with you. I always think that's such a cool spot that he does. And especially now that with the Jordan Grace match ending the way that it did, I mean, it's kind of handed to him. He finished her off with that, even though everyone knows it was because she actually got hurt or whatever. It's like he just hit that, and then her ankle rolls, and then it's like, that's perfect. Like, just play that up, that's how you take people out, even if it's like that. It's kind of like Stan Hansen and the Lariat, you know? He didn't really break Bruno's neck with the Lariat, but you play off that legend and you build it and make it bigger. So yeah, I'm with you on that for sure. I like him using the pile drivers as a finish, though. Cool, you know, cool kind of old school throwback feel. Really great stuff. Like I said, 4 stars. I thought these guys, they have this, talk about lack of chemistry in that three-way. These guys have great chemistry together. Really feel like they're fighting, going at it, kicking each other's ass. Match felt super important. Big time title situation. Everything about it was done really well.
I totally agree. Then we got the production with Jonathan Wolf and Sean Kemp, Sean Kemp. The one thing that bothered me about this match, and I mean, I'm going to toss it to you, was that it was very similar to the big main event or the big six man where the psychology was, you know, with Kemp being gone. So it was almost like head scratching. Like, why would you fucking even do that here?
Right. Yeah, especially because it didn't feel like it had any reason. Because Kemp just shows up. I mean,
yeah.
Unless I don't know what was really going on backstage and something, you know, made sense with it. But yeah, I shouldn't really be doing the same thing twice in one show.
Yeah.
But I'm going to give a thumbs up to production here. Haven't been a fan of them, but thought that they looked good here. Their heat segments and control segments on Wolf worked. And I think it helped that they had full reign because of it being handicapped 2-on-1. To really do some heelish tactics that helped make the match better. That said, the booking was infuriating. Kemp coming out for the hot tag was interesting. He looked good, but again, you talk about it with whatever the angle is or whatever reason he wasn't in the match, it then becomes more kind of blatantly what's going on when he only does partial stuff and then disappears to, you know, lead up into the finish. You go, is he injured? What's wrong? Like, why couldn't he just do the match? What's going on here? So it does make you kind of question everything all around in that regard. It's like, is it smoke and mirrors situation where you're trying to cover up for something? And the IFHY team, I've liked them a little bit in the amount that I've seen, but you didn't really get to see it here because, you know, one guy is not even in the match. I give it 2 stars because, like I said, I really liked the production's heat segments, and I thought that they did a good job as being really shitty heels that people just couldn't stand. But otherwise, it is head-scratching as why you would do that same angle on the same show.
Yeah, I'm with you. I gave it 1.5 stars. There's nothing else to really cover on it. That leads us into the main event of Dominic Guarini versus Wheeler Yuta. Again, another strong fucking match. I give it 3 3/4. Fun grappling. It looks like Yuta's trying to target the back. Big-time strikes in this match. We see Dom destroying the ribs. Dom's aggressiveness has, like, improved so much in the last year. Drop kick to the floor was mistimed, and Dylan tried to cover it on commentary. But, yeah, it was clearly mistimed. The kickouts were a little excessive at times towards the finish. Good stuff overall. 3 3/4. I really, really, really liked it, and yeah, they really bookend these two with the two title matches is super strong stuff. What you make of this one, Tim?
Yeah, it's funny. I was not necessarily trying to think of a way to shoehorn it in, but it was fresh on my mind having listened to WorldCast with your partner over there, Johnny, talking about the Samoa Joe versus Jay Briscoe bloodbath cage match, and in a lot of ways, this had a vibe to that. Similar to that for me, especially in this setting. But overall, Yuta is a guy who comes across a little bit clean cut in a lot of places, kind of, you know, still a young man, just a boy. But this match, it felt like he manned up, really going at it with Dom, who I think in a lot of ways is presented similar to Samoa Joe, not as impenetrable and undefeatable, but this really felt like a coming of age kind of match for Yuta. The only thing that could make it better is if it was like Jay and Joe and there was just a bloodbath in a cage, but we can get there maybe. But yeah, I felt like this was a really good showing for Yuta in this setting. He felt like, rather than trying to be, you know, square peg in a round hole and be that same kind of, not goofy, but a little bit maybe too white bread babyface for, especially for the sup grap crowd here in the basement, he turned it up in some grittiness as like a fighter. And it also didn't hurt that he's wearing the trunks. I've never really seen him wearing the trunks before. I'm usually wearing the long boys. So this that also helped him kind of stand out as a different person almost. Threw a really nice looking lariat. Got himself fired back up. Crowd gets into him. Yeah, the strike off was just nasty and sick. So, yeah, and then, you know, Dom throwing him around, stretching him out. So, yeah, like I said, really, really good showing for Yuta here. A guy who I'm not over the top super high on, but a guy who I think has a lot of potential. And showings like this make that stand out even more, where you're kind of delivering on that potential and not just doing the same stuff over and over again, but again, being in a different setting and getting to show that you're more than just one thing. My only issue that I would have with the match, and it's not necessarily the match, but the booking, is that we just recently had the Jeff Cobb debut title shot match in SUP with Dom, and it feels like doing it again with Yuta just feels like you're kind of diminishing returns in that. I mean, Jeff Cobb feels like a big enough guy to show up and get a title match in his first match, but Yuta just kind of quite doesn't. They delivered on the match, and they made it, by the end of it, made it kind of make sense. And I understand you have an angle that you want to set up here, so you couldn't have Dom just like kind of tear through him. So you had to give a lot more to Yuta to make it seem like Dom was in a fight. But I do think that after I talk about the Gary J, you know, coming up and doing everything he does to fight to make the company feel more prestigious, I think having people regularly debut and get title shots in their debut match makes it feel like the wins and losses on the rest of the card don't matter that much. And that's just like a bigger picture booking thing that I question. And I think kind of, I'm not saying that they're ruining the company because they did this here and they're doing it too much, but I worry that they don't continue doing stuff like this.
That makes sense. Yeah. You gotta, especially when like Dylan's putting over the wins earlier. So they gotta make, the promotions, the wins in the promotion count. Then at the end of that, what star rating do you give it?
Oh, 3.5. Great. Okay. Really good action. Like I said, good fight. But my, what took it down a little bit for me was that, was just kind of the booking and the presentation where I'm like, why is Yuta here having like a pretty straight up fight with Dom, where Dom even seems like he's, you know, getting his ass kicked somewhat. But, you know, again, it plays into the angle at the end.
All right, and then we get Marco stunned. He cashes in. And he ends up winning. I mean, I enjoyed the finish worked here for me because it was like a fluke flash pin. I don't know. I like that. I liked the fact that, you know, Ku and Guarini are together and they're laying out Cabana Dan and Marco. But I didn't like that Marco got to get the final comeback. Because it felt like, well, the big back heels need to lay out the baby faces. Unless the heels are going to go over in this tag match. I get the Marco stunt love. I mean, I even understand it, especially here, because he's going to be, he's a local, so he'll work SUP regularly. But as he's, you know, becoming a higher res property right now. But man, I don't know. I don't know about having him. I don't think I'd ever have him been pinned Dominic, because I think Dominic's gold and he's. And his rep, and he's too big. I mean, I don't know. It just feels like he's too big of a deal for the promotion to do this. But if any promotion should have done it, I can see SUP doing it because how big of a reaction Marco is, and they yell that he's the guy. So I kind of have mixed emotions on it. But obviously they're building to a tag match. I think Dominic is the top 10 worker in the world right now. So having him job here, I don't know. It worked to the live crowd, I'll say that. I just don't know if it worked for me. Where do you fall on this?
I am with you with being slightly more positive, I think.
Okay.
And, you know, that's coming from someone who's been pretty trepidatious on the Marco stunt thing overall. But like you said, and I would echo, I mean, it's exactly what was in my head, is if anyone was going to do this and not have me just completely lose my shit, it's going to be SUP because he's their guy. And you said he's the guy. Like, it's the place where he's kind of had the most standout.
That's where he started it, yeah.
Yeah, so it makes sense, the ultimate underdog, all that. Again, it plays into, it would have worked better if I had had Dom's challenger before had been someone more established. And I mean, if it had been Dom versus Ison or O'Shea or something, you know, I could buy into that with a big angle at the end and some bullshit, and he gets jumped, then he gets taken advantage of by stunt, sure. But then you stack on the Kevin Ku thing, which I don't know. I mean, did that make sense here? We both love them as a team. We both were raving about how we'd like to see them tag more. So that's not a bad thing, especially them against Cabana Man Dan and Marco Stunt. Sounds like a match I'd really get into.
Yeah, as them as heels and them as babyfaces, it works.
Yeah.
But it feels like we've – it almost feels like they sacrificed all they've built And, I mean, it felt like they had Kevin Koo and MJF going in a direction from the previous show. You had Dom was a babyface, and now you like almost looks like you've turned him heel.
Right. And Dom, I mean...
And if it's just for one program, I think that's the bad... I don't know. I just think long-term, you need Dom as the face of the company, along with Stallion as the number one heel.
Right.
And but, you know, maybe they're going in a different direction. We just don't know. I mean,
right. And
we'll see how that plays out. And so I'm willing, you know, I'm willing to give him rope to either hang himself with or swing to swing and have another great show. But so we'll see.
Yeah, and that plays into it too. I feel like the Kurt Stallion turn and Dom stuff was too recent to then have Dom turn around and turn like this. And you know, I really feel like Dom, I don't know, I felt like Dom was positioned pretty strongly as a babyface, and this really feels like a pretty heelish move, for sure. The Kevin Koo team is exciting, but, you know, not necessarily the way I would have gone in this setting, unfortunately, which is it feels so bad to say that, because just literally probably last week, I was, like, begging for more of this tag team, and then now they, like, somehow delivered it in the one situation where I didn't want it.
Right.
Which,
and you know, and Kevin Koo gets credit after having this hard fought battle with Tracy Williams. All that did was help elevate him. And then, yeah, it almost feels like, okay, erase, scratch all that.
Right. And now it's going to be this tag team thing. And you know, I, in some ways, I liked Marco getting the comeback on the end, primarily for the, for that moment where he's sitting in the ring with his leg crossed. I thought that was a real moment.
Bro, no, it was cool. It was well executed.
Yeah. But I get what you're saying, because I almost think you shouldn't have done the jumping them thing if you're going to have him do the comeback. But I also get wanting to end on a high note, especially when you just had like a big time cathartic moment with the guy that everyone loves. You want to have him stand tall. But that's, again, that kind of plays into just not doing the heel angle, the heel turn angle.
Yeah, I would have done it. And that's the thing is, if you're going to make Dom and Koo heels, you better leave them standing tall.
Yeah.
End of the show. We've already had Dom lose his belt, and now he had Marco Stunt run him off. That doesn't scream badass heel to me, you know.
No, yeah. And another thing to point out, and this is like, it's so foreboding, but I think I was talking to you about the Cabana Band Dan stuff. I don't know if it was, you know, the last sub show that we reviewed, but you even said at that time when I was talking about how I don't like the flip-flop chop stuff, you even pointed out, like, I don't mind it as a comedy mid-card thing, but now it's at the top of the card.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Will they drop that part of his act? Will he get more serious?
No, it's so over. There's no way.
I know he's using it here to fight off Dom, but it's just like, will this be able to adapt to a main event level that works? I don't know. Will I like the match? Probably. I probably will enjoy the tag team match, because all four guys are at the correct positioning. They're teams that are really diametrically opposed in a really interesting way. So it could end up being a lot of fun, but it is on shaky ground.
Yeah, so we'll see. But overall, man, I thought this was a killer show. I really did. I thought the wrestling up and down the card was very well done. And a lot of acts I enjoy. So
I thought they did hard, too.
Really good job.
Yeah, everyone working hard. Lots of cool stuff. Maybe a little booking issues and, you know, parts.
Yeah, a little couple of things here and there, but yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, much less than the hour we spent with MLW, though, on booking.
Yeah, exactly.
On that note, man, what do you got to plug, brother?
Same old, not much going on this week. Just follow me on Twitter at Lucha Undead.
Follow me at Twitter at Titus O'Wrestling, WorldCast Wednesdays, we usually review world-class championship wrestling from the network. On that note, have a great week and weekday, weekend. Watch wrestling any shape, form that you can find that you enjoy personally. And that's what matters, is what you enjoy. Everybody has different tastes. Some like tall women, some like short women, some like big women, some like small. Same thing with wrestling. Have a great one. Later.
Tell me everywhere you wanna go when you can. find the magic. Tell me everywhere you wanna go when you can. Find the magic when you can. Find the magic. I was being young, I was being dumb. When you can't find the magic anymore. When you gave up all your friends for love.